I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to be talking about how broccoli can provide benefits against liver disease from the Journal of Nutrition, and how higher vitamin C intake helps slow cataract progression from the Journal of Ophthalmology, and how nighttime fasting reduces breast cancer risk from the Journal of American Medical Association's Oncology, and how vitamin D improves heart function. We have all this, plus a lot more on health and healing. Then today is commentary day, meaning I'm going to share my own commentary, one that I wrote early this morning when I started realizing that what is this presidential race but a freak show between those that are clearly sociopathic and those are simply mean-spirited narcissist. Well, how in the world does anyone benefit from that? All their people benefit, especially those who align themselves on both sides of the issue. So we're going to talk about Obama's imperial Middle East policy. He couldn't get away with it unless those in power wanted it. And the Pathology Incorporated, the Facade of American Democracy, by Dr. Nozomi Hayesi from Countercurrents. I'll be having my own commentary involved in this. And then the U.S. government's hooked on, obsessed with perpetual war, from Michael Payne, Nation of Change. And from our audio clips today, we're going to hear from two people who I believe we don't hear enough from. And one of them is talking about false flags, and that's someone who was in two separate administrations, and that's Naomi Klein. And also lecturing for a group that promotes teaching Sharia law. Who could have that been? And why do the neocons and the Clintons want regime change in Syria? And if Hillary becomes president, I predict a full-out invasion of Syria, and then allowing a green light for Israel to attack Iran. Does anyone anticipate the consequences of that? Think of Vietnam in the Middle East. And yet the Democrats will continue to coddle her. So we'll discuss all this. Let's begin. We have the latest with health and nutrition. Now, we know we should be eating broccoli. Broccoli is one of the cruciferous vegetables, and that includes kale, collard greens, watercress. It also includes Brussels sprouts and asparagus. And these are extremely beneficial because they contain nutrients like the isothiocyanates or the indole-3 carbonyls. These are chemicals that actually help block cancer. But they do more than that. According to the Journal of Nutrition, quote, "We decided that liver cancer needed to be studied, particularly because of the obesity epidemic in the United States. It is already in the literature that obesity enhances the risk of liver cancer, and this is particularly true for men." And that was stated by University of Illinois lead researcher Elizabeth Jeffrey. So they found that by giving broccoli powder or a standard diet, they found that, quote, "We found that the westernized diet did increase fatty liver. We saw that the broccoli protected against it. Broccoli stopped too much uptake of fat into the liver by decreasing the uptake and increasing the output of lipid from the liver." So in lay language, if you're overweight, you run the risk of liver cancer. If you take broccoli or other cruciferous vegetables, you help reduce that risk. Now, for those of you using vitamin C, good for you. I just believe we're using far too little. And how do I know that? Is that just a guess? Is it even an educated guess? Their answer is no. Instead, with tens of thousands of people having been given vitamin C at different doses, and one time almost 3,700 given intravenous vitamin C, starting at 30,000 milligrams and going up to 200,000 milligrams. It was only when they were between 150 and 200,000 milligrams that I saw firsthand, as did the physicians and the nurses, we saw the improvement, radical improvement in people with AIDS-defining illnesses. And I personally work with over 1,200 persons with AIDS-defining illnesses using natural non-toxic therapies to help them regain their health. And 12 of those people, 8 of whom showed up on national PBS television over a period of 2 years, completely reversed all AIDS completely, totally, 100%. But we also saw breast cancer, pancreatic cancer, lung cancer, brain cancer, glioblastomas, all improve or reverse. It was not with the lower doses. And then something that I remember Albert St. George, who won the Nobel Prize for discovering ascorbic acid, he had told this to me, but then Linus Pauling also told this to me. And I don't know if they had had a conversation or if they came to it from separate positions, and that was, humans cannot produce in the liver with glucose vitamin C or ascorbate. Animals can. A few can't, but animals can. So if you take a look at the goat, and at that time, I had a sanctuary upstate. Many of you, thousands of you, visited. It's called the Fertiller Farm. And on weekends in the summer, I taught people how to do homesteading and organic farming in herbs and making tofu. And I also had a sanctuary, and at one time I had about 36 goats, Nubians and Alpines and others. And what you notice is the goats never get sick, and they eat everything. I mean, they eat everything that's out there. They'll eat weeds, they'll eat poisoned berries, and their immune system seems to be able to protect them. Other animals, no. Then they both said the same thing at different times, about 10 years apart. Albert St. George and Linus Pauling. They said, if you want a good example of how much vitamin C a human should have, compare it to a farm animal that rarely, if ever, gets cancer, and that would be the goat. Now, if you took an average goat of, let's say, 20 pounds, and that's for a relatively small goat, and you look at how much their body actually produces, it's between 20 to 40,000 milligrams of vitamin C per day. And they're not eating junk food. They're not eating sugars and corn starch and fructose and soft drinks and caffeine and meat. They're vegans. So they live long lives. They're healthy. And they're eating weeds and grasses. How much would a human need if you compared it to what that animal uses? And then you start realizing, gee whiz, that would be up between at least, figure around 20,000 milligrams a day in that vicinity, and that's what gave Linus Pauling his insights to start increasing the amount he was taking. And he believed between 18 and 20,000 milligrams is about the most the body can handle orally. And that's why intravenous. But when we get up to the high dose of vitamin C intravenous, that's when we start seeing some remarkable improvements. Unfortunately, most doctors are not familiar with that. But one of the doctors that came into New York, because he heard I was doing work before the AIDS epidemic with one of New York's leading gay physicians, Stephen Kaizen. I was helping his patients he was not able to help with a gay men's bowel disease. And high vitamin C was one of the treatments. It's just one of the many things being used. And the number one cause of death at one time in men who had AIDS-defining illnesses was Kaposi's sarcoma, and then pneumocystis carinii pneumonia. Those were the one, too. So Cathcart began to use higher doses of vitamin C, and he found that at 50,000 milligrams intravenous a day, he could reverse, in 100% of the cases, Kaposi's sarcoma and save lives. And he became very well-known on the West Coast, California, for helping men with that disease. Unfortunately, it never spread within mainstream medicine. No one knew about it. Well, today there are over 30,000 studies in the peer-reviewed literature on vitamin C. So if you want to know what it does and how important it is, including intravenous, just Google vitamin C intravenous therapies. You'll see it. This is from the peer-reviewed journal Ophthalmology, and it shows that consuming high amounts of vitamin C could slow the risk of cataract progression by a third compared to low intake. Researchers at King's College London examined data from over 1,000 pairs of twins enrolled in the Twins UK registry. And what they found was that when you took high doses of vitamin C, one twin did, the other did not, that there was a 20% lower reduction in cataract risk in those who consumed high-dose vitamin C. And then when they increased the risk, increased the dose, it was 33% low risk of cataract progression. So that's terrific. You have twins living the same lifestyle, same genetic predispositions, and you take high dose of vitamin C, which was really not high dose, in my opinion. You reduce cataract by one third. So in my opinion, in order to reduce your risk of macular degeneration and cataracts, between 3 to 5,000 milligrams of buffered vitamin C per day. Also, now this may seem strange, nighttime fasting reduces breast cancer risk, but this was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association's Oncology, and fasting for more than 13 hours a night can reduce the risk of breast cancer substantially. This is from Dr. Ruth Patterson, University of California, San Diego, and colleagues work with 2,413 participants, all diagnosed with breast cancer, and the Women's Healthy Eating and Living Study. And they want to find out what happens if you fast. Well, what happens is that the women who fasted 13 hours had 36% lower breast cancer. Now, let's say that you eat your last meal at 6 o'clock at night. If you just waited till 7 o'clock the next morning before you had food, that would make a difference. However, that doesn't mean you don't have to have nutrients. You could certainly have a green juice. You could have lemon water and chlorophyll at night before you go to bed in the morning. But we just overconsume calories, and we pay a risk for that. So stop the nighttime eating and help protect yourself from breast cancer. And finally, from the American College of Cardiology, they just showed that vitamin D3 improves heart function in people with chronic heart failure. The study by the University of Leeds School of Medicine included 160 patients who were already being treated for their heart failure using proven treatments like beta blockers and ACE inhibitors or pacemakers. Now, they either were given a vitamin D3 or they were given a placebo for 1 year. And what they found was that they had an improvement of 34% in the heart's pumping function when they took the vitamin D3. How about that? That could save an awful lot of lives. Vitamin D3, generally at 2,000 to 3,000, even 4,000 or 5,000 units a day, can save your life. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health and healing. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us. From all over the world, people are listening. I'm Gary Noll. I want to mention that in the very near future, when we don't know, but assuming it's the next 30 days, we'll be hearing from Julian Assange. He's going to leak some documents and supposedly they're going to tell us something about Hillary Clinton that may change people's perspective. And we wait for that. However, this evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Commentary Hour, I'm going not to be leaking. I'm going to be providing you with some insight that you have not heard before. New information on both Obama and Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State and the creation and funding of ISIS. And which banks were involved. And might there be more behind this story of Edward Snowden going public with information indicating all levels of U.S. government with unconstitutional behavior? How much did the Clinton Foundation and the neoconservative hawks now within the Democratic Party benefit from the money trail of weapons smuggling going on from Qatar and the Gulf states to Libya, Turkey, and ultimately to Salafi militants in Iraq and Syria? We're going to share some insights from a person, a former Army officer in the U.S. Army specializing in psychological warfare and counterterrorism operations. He worked within the U.S. Central Command, and he later worked at Booz Allen Hamilton. And so we're going to have a whole lot to say that may be some of the same information as Julian Assange. Don't know, but if what we share is verifiable and accurate, and I can assure you we do a great deal of vetting before we allow anyone on the air, then that would mean that Congress would be able to go back and take a look at Hillary Clinton under oath when she was questioned by Rand Paul, and when he was asking her about any knowledge, direct or indirect, of anyone shipping arms out of Libya to Syria. And she said, no. Really? No? Remember, that's perjury. And you do not require the FBI or an apologist for the Clintons in the FBI nor the Justice Department to indict you. Congress can. So 7 o'clock should be a very informative, if not historic, program. I'm going to give a commentary now, and then I'm going to open it up for you to have an opportunity to call in and share your points of view on these issues. And I'm always interested in what people have to say and how they see these issues. I'm concerned about this election, as is Dr. Nozomi Hayashi. Why? Because any responsible and reasonable human being would understand the power of money involved in our national, local, and state politics. I have suggested for a long time that we ban ALEKS, the American Legislative Exchange Council, which has been in operation for over 35 years, with anywhere from 200 to 300 different major corporations that it represents, meeting in secret at very luxurious hotels once a year, twice a year, and then working with our state legislators, actually coaching them with lobbyists from special interest groups saying, this is the law that we want passed on water pollution. We want you to take away protections of the consumer, and we want you to take anything that could hurt the polluter out. Then those legislators dutifully go back and they pass it as law. And you never see the fingerprints of the behind-the-scenes manipulations. How many laws? We don't know exactly, but the last count I had was 2 years ago, and it was over 25,000 laws they passed at the state level. I believe that every one of those laws should be rescinded. I believe that every legislator that has ever met with ALEKS and brought a law forward or a bill forward into law should be disbarred from practicing law if they're a lawyer and disgraced publicly. And never allowed to hold public office again. I believe that we should ask every one of our state legislators directly. I believe you should write your state legislator. Have you ever met with at any conference, and have you ever been given any piece of potential legislation or bill to enact into law? They say yes, then we should ask for a recall and get them out of office, or at the very least embarrass them with pickets and campaigns. Not as easy to do at the federal level, because the corruption is so deep that they're allowed insider trading. They're allowed to do things that anyone on the outside will go to jail for. And they do it all the time. We shouldn't have two sets of laws for those in power who can manipulate the system, those outside of it. So when it comes to our election, we all know that it's rigged. No one could be that dumb or that naive to think otherwise. It's merely a reality show. The mass media is creating sensations around what has become a national embarrassment, according to Nozomi, with this contest of the lesser of two crazies. On the one hand, we have Donald Trump. In my personal opinion, the quintessential multi-personality narcissist. And on the other hand, Hillary Clinton, who is often portrayed as a sociopath. What an understatement. Hype is created by putting these labels on the candidates, pitting one personality disorder against the other. This is a corporate-sponsored election charade, doing business as usual and distracting people from the real power behind the veil. What is that power? It is the corporate state. How much power? Well, it is complete. And it is consistent in its own character with the attributes of corporations that are nothing more than human extensions of psychopathology. Psychopathology is a personality disorder that cuts off those who are affected by it from the emotional reality of others. Quite simply, you don't care what impact you have. For example, a very good example, and this is for the so-called liberals, the pseudo-intellectuals, the pseudo-spiritual, the pseudo-concern, the pseudo, all pseudo because it's not there in reality. It's been sold out. When Madeleine Albright went on 60 Minutes and was asked by Leslie Stahl, what about the 500,000 kids that have died because of the sanctions? Was it worth it? And she said, yes, it's worth it. Well, we could add in that it wasn't 500,000. It ended up being 675,000 died. What if those were 675,000 American children? Would we still say it was worth it? Now, it depends upon perspective. If they were black children, Puerto Rican children, those of poor white children, she might say the same thing. But what if the only children you could judge had value would be white, 1%, oligarch children, Bill Gates' children, or Mark Zuckerberg's children? Would you then say that sacrificing 675,000 of their lives was worth it? I don't think so. But that is the type of intemperate, hidden racism that is percolating underneath the facade of the media and underneath those who are in power, who never stop and say, wonder what it's like to be on the other side of that drone where we just blew up that wedding party. Wonder what it's like when we just armed Saudi Arabia with our jets and our bombs, and they just decimated the poorest country in the Middle East, Yemen. Wonder what it's like when we put depleted uranium all over the Balkans in a war that should never have happened. Oh, by the way, you were told that Milosevic was found innocent in a 3,000-page verdict from the International Criminal Court of Yugoslavia. You did know that because all the mainstream media that was vilifying him and NATO that was supporting the bombing said that he was evil and a Hitler. So I'm sure the New York Times ran a front-page story, and CNN, surely, Anderson Cooper would have had to have said, hey, we got it wrong, NATO. He wasn't a Hitler. He was actually trying to prevent the war. Others in his country were engaged and were found guilty of genocide. He was found innocent. No, we don't apologize. That's one of the marks of this type of sociopathy. You don't ever apologize. You don't have to. So empathy is the seat of consciousness. And without empathy comes an incapacity for love. Have any of you noticed that some of the people in your lives talk about love but never show it? They show need but not love. And when you don't give them the love that they feel they deserve or demand, they suddenly lash out at you with some emotional hellfire missiles, as if you're a acceptable target. Where's the love? You can't have it both ways. You can't say, I'm filled with love, I'm sharing love, but then engage in hate. What you're engaging is the true nature of your being. You're a sociopath. And our country is loaded with sociopaths. Many of them walk the red carpets of life, not just in movies, but in all walks of life, in corporate power. They care not about their incapacity for love because they disguise it and supplement it with success and power. These candidates are just symptoms of a system run by corporations, which is now revealing the full-fledged pathology incorporated here in the United States. When a society lacks understanding of the depth of its own darkness, its own dark nature, this unaccountable power sees no bounds for its pursuit of a single vision. What it does in the end, it perverts humanity. I wish more Americans would have read a similar work called The Mask of Sanity. It was first published back in 1941 by psychiatrist Hervey Cleckley, and it articulated how among the traits of psychopathy, such as superficial charm, emotional poverty, and egocentricity, its essential characteristics lie in its complete sense of deceit. It lies with a smile. Those who are devoid of empathy hide their lack of internal structure in a facade of normalcy. By emulating good human attributes, these unknown members of society prey on the rest. They have found the best way to mask their vice is by infiltrating governments or charities or Pacifica Foundation. Hey, want to talk about some of the world's leading sociopaths? Why not go to some of the board meetings? Charm and Citizens Unite. For what? To keep us in power. But isn't that against our rules? Whoever holds the power rules. And think of what people have done in the name of serving their radio stations and serving their listeners and serving the communities. How often have they been so corrupted by their own sociopathology that all they do is keep the smile coming, keep the rhetoric coming, and you don't see the reaction nor the results. If we judge people on the results of their actions, boy, would we have a different way of living. Everything would change, radically change. By emulating good human attributes, mimicking it, these unknown members of society prey on the rest. They have found the best way to mask their vice is by seeming normal. They control the monetary supply. They control NGOs, non-governmental agencies. Give you a good example of this. Go down to Haiti. You will see thousands of these brand new, high-end, $50,000 to $100,000 cars whizzing all over Port-au-Prince and other places, and their offices and where they stay are in these multi-million-dollar villas up in the mountains, built with taxpayer money, relief money. But what are they actually doing there? Are they actually helping people? And the answer is no. But as long as they control the media, and if they control the message, and if they get people in front who are able to seem concerned, then we believe them, and hence we believe their false message. In the end, it's all about them, like the American Red Cross or the American Cancer Society or so many of these organizations. Whose interests do they actually serve? And what happens is, it's almost as if we have a Ponzi scheme of Darwinian survival of the most callous and cunning. By turning morality upside down, they not only make their deviance invisible, but actively incentivize these disturbing characters, making all people engage in a race to the bottom. If you doubt me, why don't you turn on any cooking show today? Do you have a healthy version of Julia Child or James Beard showing you how to make a dish and sharing wonderful stories about life? No. No, it's no different than watching a Steven Seagal or one of the other Bloodsport films. It's about people competing to win. If you don't win, you're a loser. You're off. You're out. Degrade the person for what they didn't do to your false expectation. Then look at the judges. The judges are no measure of perfection on any level. What, Ramsey, because you can show how vulgar a human being can be, how mean-spirited, how despicable, how tasteless, and how clueless about anything representing true talent, that you win, and therefore you have the right to judge everyone else by your own narcissistic qualities? Yeah. And media loves it. Behind every raving person on television, there's a whole group enablers. And these are the adaptive aggressives. These are the best and brightest out of our Ivy League schools who know how to manipulate the public. Because once you start seeing how mean someone can be, how bad they can be, how vulgar they can be, you realize you're throwing raw meat to starving dogs, the public. Where does it lead? Look at your limitations, and that becomes your future. Because if right now we're turning something as simple as trying to show people how to cook, but all the food we're cooking is extremely unhealthy, extreme portions, by extremely narcissistic personalities, where does that lead us except into a nation of gluttons, like the old Roman feasts where you would eat and then go over to a purge bucket and vomit so you could go back and eat some more? And that's what we become, a nation that is purging only to the degree that we have gluttonized on reality. And what do you see on reality shows? All of them. You see the worst of human nature, the most despicable, selfish, self-absorbed individuals that you would never want in your life. And that these are the people who are selected to coexist with other people on an island. And it's no longer any good just to select some people who are all dysfunctional and put them on an island, see who's the worst of the worst, and then reward that person. Now they have to be naked. Why do they have to be naked? Well, because the viewers are getting bored, so we had to do something different. You realize where this goes, where people have to get into a cage and beat each other. Where does it go when one day someone's decided we need more blood so we won't stop the fight? It's fighting to the death. That's how far down the rabbit hole of decadency the average American, including those who create new fashion at Walmart and show you how you can get a size 65 butt into a 13 pair of pants. And that's where we've gone. And so we cry about our obesity, our diabetes, but we won't prevent it. We look at our children dying of preventable diseases and we won't stop it. The media will not help. The manufacturers of the junk food are part of it. The medical community is complicit. It won't stand up against it. Where was the last time you saw all the doctors, over 800,000 in America, have a general strike about the Surgeon General and the U.S. Public Health Service being so inept, so disqualifying when it comes to preventing disease? Because we all know what causes disease, but where's the person courageous enough to stand up and call it out? By seducing masses with the allure of middle-class lifestyle and material pursuit of happiness, the beast within humanity unlocks citizens' unconscious desires and opens the door to unbridled commercial interest. The government that was hijacked by corporate lobbyists established a symbiotic relationship with its own people, making voters become the host through manufacturing of consent. While people are busy chasing the American dream of shopping in malls until they drop and trying to climb a corporate ladder of success, and if you doubt me, go down to Wall Street each day and see how many people are taking cocaine or mugs of coffee to stay awake to get there early so that they can compete for what? To create some step in a ladder of illusion, by the more sales they get, almost always by deception, by being able to compromise any last vestige of morality and ethic they have by making people who are obscenely rich by unethical means richer, by even more unethical means, that somehow they're good. No, Wall Street, corporate America, you are parasites. You latch on to the most vulnerable, the simple-minded, those who have lacked the capacity for critical thinking or choose to be intentionally ignorant on everything. and then you suck the blood of innocents in the Middle East and the laboring sweat of the disadvantaged populations around the world until there's nothing left. But it does not quench your insatiable appetite for more. And people who need more only need more because they are so empty to begin with. Like adventurous American eagles who have no fear of soaring too high, corporate patronage networks with wings of oil companies on the right and Wall Street banking industry leftists on the left take flight to conquer the globe. Vultures circle around the Bermuda Triangle, the TPP, the TTIP, and the TISA, creating a vortex of unregulated greed. And when their conquest turns sour, they make sure that they get bailed out, always at the taxpayer's expense, always where the taxpayer loses everything, always where President and Congress never once even intimates that maybe they should have a moratorium on home foreclosures, a moratorium on prison debt, a moratorium on poverty as a crime. Not once will you hear that uttered from a sociopath's mouth. Instead, you will see them when New Orleans is immersed in the worst flood in its history, someone playing golf. Now, there is a priority lesson. Waves of whistleblowers in recent years have brought true resistance against this corporate takeover of democracy. Human beings who feel the pulse of conscience in the heart are a real threat to this authoritarian state that works in secrecy. They punish with impunity these truth-tellers who reveal their crimes. Chelsea Manning, who shed a light on the government, the illegal wars, is in prison serving 35 years. Did Chelsea Manning actually commit a crime against humanity? No. She exposed crimes against humanity, but in our warped notion of left and right, the politics of oneness, of insanity, she is now perceived as the criminal, as is Edward Snowden and all the other whistleblowers. The people who did the criminal action, the crimes that were exposed, never a word. Administrations of this merciless autocratic system deflect issues and protect characteristics that belong to them. With smear campaigns and character assassinations, the mainstream media attacks anyone who dares to hold an accurate mirror of what they are really doing. WikiLeaks, the publisher of Last Resort, has been a target of this coordinated assault. This assault on global freedom of speech never ends. Called by U.S. officials a high-tech terrorist and incited for assassination, WikiLeaks editor-in-chief Julian Assange remains detained in an Ecuadorian embassy despite U.N. working groups ruling earlier and clearly stating that this was unlawful. And recent WikiLeaks publications on the DNC emails led to the forced resignation of top officials who immediately, within the same 24 hours of being fired for creating these immoral, unethical, if not illegal, acts, were hired by Hillary Clinton personally to be her honorary chairman of her campaign. What in the world does that tell you about her and the Democratic Party? This Democratic Party's habit of destabilizing democracy is nothing new. They have destabilized a lot. We're now seeing the old knee-jerk reactions to all of this. The establishment media attacks Assange, attacks the Green Party candidates like Jill Stein, slandering them as colluding with Vladimir Putin. And even the new DNC chair, Donna Brazile, has now joined the attack. They all twist reality. In conclusion, these developments are all part of their psychological makeup. Psychopathic abuse unfolds in three stages, defined as idealized, devaluation, and discard. With charm and feigned empathy, they allure potential victims into their snare. As soon as they seal the relationship and take what they want, they begin looking for their next victim to exploit. At one point, sooner or later, the mask of the sociopath slips and the monster beneath reveals itself. Psychopathology has been running through the history of America, dragging people into a mission of manifest destiny. The indigenous in this country were terrorized and murdered while blacks were enslaved and brutalized. The poor and people of color have been continuously abandoned and impoverished. They all have seen the barbarians inside Western civilization, and now even the crumbling middle class, as clueless as it is about everything in life, are now beginning to realize, my God, we're looking in the face of the savage beast. Obama's campaign was a mastery of deception. Now the devaluation of this whole concept is moving to a final stage. The masks are blowing off, and corporate masters behind the scenes don't even care to maintain a semblance of democracy anymore. The lesser of two evils in this cycle is showcasing two of the most disliked presidential candidates in U.S. history. So while you are all being distracted, here's what issues were not addressed at all. Poverty situated in at least one in six U.S. kids living in the United States. The scourge of bankrupt families due to high medical costs. The out-of-control health care cost. The politicalization of medicine that prevents people to choose their choice of health care. Infant mortalities increasing. Iatrogenic medical deaths are number two leading cause of death in the United States. The gross domestic product that relies upon the military is over 50%. Drones, unnecessary military projects to keep private industries thriving, and toxic weapons and the return to nuclear arms race propelled forward. The largest incarcerated population per capita, subsidizing oligarchical interests, not the common human being. A completely poisoned food system. The most regressive laws regarding GMOs and labeling in the world. Honeybee and pollinators collapsing. No critical thought or assessment of vaccine policies. Fossil fuel consumption is unabated. No national-wide effort to get off of fossil fuels and switch to renewables. Continuing to prop up egregious and energy-dependent corporations. Continuing the degradation of forests, biodiversity, the oceans, the parks, for private profit. Failing educational system that is a joke. And policing schools as if they were prisons. Continuation of the war on drugs, including marijuana policies. Rampant racism in social services and healthcare and employment education. Systematic corruption in all utilities, including water and services necessary to sustain life. User fees and payday loans reaching 600 to 1,000%. Return of debtors' prisons. No concentrated effort to deal with sex slavery and child porn. The militarization of local and state law enforcement. Increase of SWAT teams to over 50,000 raids a year, and most of them are for minor infractions, including not paying debts, accepting a fact that democracy in the U.S. is dead. Asset forfeiture, we're now in one state, they've started in all states that will have it, is a little machine that they carry. They ask for your credit cards, debit cards, and they can take all the cash out of your accounts, even though you've committed no crime. They did $4 billion in asset forfeitures last year to people who had committed no crime. Rescinding older trade agreements like NAFTA and CAFTA and GATT as being garbage. Enabling and increasing conflicts of interest between government and private firms. The State Department is an enabler of the private corporate interest. The privatization of federal agencies, the privatization and corruption, complete corruption of the CDC, the FDA, the Department of Agriculture and Energy. Foreign policy that promotes dictators, tyrants, and abusers of human rights. Wouldn't you know it that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama are both completely coddled in with Saudi Arabia, and Saudi Arabia has now decided that women shouldn't drive because it could lead them to crime, and that more homosexuals should be killed because just watching the promotion of anything involving homosexuality leads to homosexuality, so that you should behead them. And not a word of protest from America, because someone is going to get an arms contract, and that is more important. A foreign policy that has made the ethic of upholding human rights non-existent. The uncritical support of Israel, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt. War, conflict, regime change before diplomacy. Hubris, pathological sense of U.S. military hegemonic supremacy on a global scale. All natural resources in the world are merely looked upon as Americans' interests for the corporate class. Foreign policy is a contributor to climate change and global warming. The U.S. military, the largest consumer of fossil fuels, with no effort to have them stop or lessen their pollution. And lastly, the complete, total capitulation of anything representing truth from the American media. The entire media establishment has been compromised beyond saving, trusting, or valuing on any level. I'm Gary Knoll. Time for Talkback, 888 877-474-4888, 888-874-4888. Back in a moment. Nice to have you with us, everyone. We're going to go to your calls as soon as they come in. I'm going to play just about 5 minutes of a short piece that will be played in depth in the second hour tonight. I want you to hear from a U.S. senator and a person going to Syria, spending time there, unsupervised, coming back with a radically different idea of who the Syrian people are, the respect they have for Assad, their president, and the fact that we have been lied to about everything involving Syria as we were lied to about Libya. We're going to play a little short clip of that. Then we're going to hear from Naomi Wolf exposing fake news and false flags. She was a former Clinton Gore political consultant, and we're going to hear from her. And then we're also going to, if time permit, take your calls. And our number on TalkBack is 888-874-4888. By the way, I mentioned I'll be going, having a health support group this Saturday. It's the following Saturday. I forgot this is a holiday. So the following Saturday, I'll look forward to seeing you. Let's now hear from a few minutes of this senator, U.S. senator, visiting Syria.
I do have one question. During the crisis or any time that you're aware of, has the Federal Reserve or Treasury participated in any gold swaps arrangements?
We don't. The Federal Reserve does not own any gold at all. We have not owned gold since 1934.
The Federal Reserve does not own any gold at all. We have not owned gold since 1934. The Federal Reserve does not own any gold at all.
If Gaddafi had an intent to try to reprice his oil or whatever else the country was selling in the global markets and accept something else as a currency or maybe launch a gold in our currency, any move such as that would certainly not be welcomed by the power elite today who are responsible for controlling the world's central banks. So yes, that would certainly be something that would cause his immediate dismissal and the need for other reasons to be brought forth for removing him from power.
It's happened before. In 2000, Saddam Hussein announced Iraqi oil would be traded in euros, not dollars. Sanctions and an invasion followed. Some say because the Americans were desperate to prevent OPEC from transferring oil trading in all its member countries to the euro.
The UK's gold is kept here in a secure vault somewhere in the depths of the Bank of England. As in most developed countries, there's not enough to go around. But that's not the case in places like Libya and many of the Gulf states. A gold dinar would have given oil-rich African and Middle Eastern countries the power to turn around to their energy-hungry customers and say, sorry, the price has gone up and we want gold. Some say the US and its NATO allies literally couldn't afford to let that happen. Laura Emmett, RT, London.
President Obama unequivocally putting Muammar Gaddafi on hold in a phone call to German Chancellor Angela Merkel. The president said Gaddafi was using mass violence as his only means of staying in power, that Gaddafi had lost legitimacy, and for the first time, that Gaddafi should leave now. And late last night, the White House rolled out new sanctions against Libya, blocking bank accounts and freezing the assets of Gaddafi, his regime, and senior and his children. The president had held back on calling for Gaddafi to step down until U.S. citizens were safely out of the country. Today, the president intensified the pressure. Russ.
Joel Brown at the White House.
Well, right now, diplomats the world over are scratching their heads on how to manage the situation in Libya. And on top of sanctions, Colonel Gaddafi now faces the possibility of a no-fly zone over his country. British Prime Minister David Cameron said he would work with his allies on preparations for such a plan and would not rule out the use of military assets. At the same time, the United States is also repositioning its naval and air forces around Libya. The BBC's diplomatic correspondent James Robbins is following that part of the story.
Okay, now there you have Libya. Understand that what Naomi Wolf's going to tell you explains that everything that we were told about Gaddafi was a lie. There was no killings, mass killings by his soldiers, raping women, just like there was no incubators with babies thrown on the floor. That was all a lie, as we would later find out, by the Kuwait Saudi's daughter. And it was all orchestrated by a PR firm. They needed to get Gaddafi's oil. They needed to get Gaddafi to stop with the gold denier. And the same, very same rationale was used for Syria. So we have all these different places we intervene as if somehow we shouldn't pay attention, shouldn't learn. Before we go to our Syrian clip, and remember, tonight at 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock, we're going to have brand new information you've never heard about the Clintons and those who help fund ISIS. I want to take some calls. Let's start with David from San Francisco. Hi, David, your turn.
Yeah, how are you, Gary? Yeah, I'm glad you're talking about this. I'm out here in San Francisco. I work on energy issues, and I've been trying to get some songwriters to write something called Sweet Crude, and that's what the whole Libyan issue was about. They have some of the highest quality oil in the world, and it not only is high quality and easy, not only is it easy to pump, but it comes out with such purity that it's incredibly cheap to produce, and it's very close to the coastline, so it's very easy to get it up to Europe or around the world. So Sweet Crude would make a pretty good song. But the issue of the issue of Syria, are you familiar with Dick Cheney's new company, Genie Energy?
Yes.
Okay, good. Yeah, because to me, ISIS is a private army of Dick Cheney, and it's a real shame that we lost Gene Wilder today. You know, he was in that famous movie Blazing Saddles, and the storyline of Blazing Saddles is identical to ISIS, that you've got an evil henchman that knows that there's a pipeline in the works, and he wants to run that pipeline for free, so he gets a whole bunch of henchmen covered up in face masks to drive the people off the land so he can run that pipeline for free. And
David, we're out of time. However, your point that there's a light, very, very beneficial crude oil in Libya is correct. But more importantly than the crude oil was the fact that had Gaddafi gotten all of Africa to agree to trade in the gold denier and go off the dollar, that would have had rippling effect across the entire Middle East. And that's why they went after him. Everything else was merely a spoil to them because of what they were able to do. So I thank you for sharing that with us. We're out of time, everyone. Thank you for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. And don't forget, a powerful show at 7 o'clock tonight that may or may not have a lot to do with what Julian Assange will be sharing with us.